Hey there, green future growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing.
Don't forget to get your copy of the 2018 Organic Gardener Podcast Garden Journal and Data Keeper, available now at Amazon.com for $16.95. It's a place to keep track of your organic gardening journey, where you can record temperature, weather, recipes, produce that you grew, produce that you bought, and just all your successes and failures and challenges and dreams for the future, all your garden goals. Keep them track of them in one place. 225 pages that will go through each week of the year for the 2018 year. And just there's blank pages in there where you can sketch or write or do anything that will help you record your journey. So don't forget to get a copy of the 2018 Garden Journal and Data Keeper, available at Amazon. You can go to the organicgardenerpodcast.com/2018 for the link.
Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. Today I'm super excited to introduce my featured guests, Doug and Stacy from Off the Grid, or Off the Grid with Doug and Stacy. And I just know listeners are going to love this. Mike and I lived off the grid for 6 years, I think. And so I've got a little bit of experience there. And I just know they have a great YouTube channel I know you're going to love to check out. And just we're excited to share their story today. So welcome to the show, Doug and Stacy.
All right. Thanks for having us.
Yes, it's awesome to be here.
And now you said you're in Missouri?
Yeah, we're in northern Missouri.
Okay. Well, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourselves.
So we have a YouTube channel called Off Grid with Doug and Stacy. I'm Doug.
And I'm Stacy.
And we basically post daily videos about our life of living off grid. We built a log cabin in 90 days from scratch. We harvested the wood and built it with no carpentry skills. We have an organic garden with raised beds, and we use the Back to Eden method. And we also, this year, we just built a greenhouse so we can extend our growing season.
Oh, all right. Built a log cabin in 90 days from scratch. Well, that sounds amazing. Did you have a lot of helpers? Did you have like a whole team that come? Like, how did you do that?
No. Yeah, there was three people that helped me out, me, myself, and I.
No way.
Yeah, I bought a tractor when we first bought the land. Luckily, because we were city slickers and we had zero experience with any of this stuff, when we came out here, I thought, wow, we have 11 acres. And, you know, I got this great big Allison Chalmers tractor. And luckily I did, because it had a bucket on it and it was more than adequate to lift the logs into place. So basically, I just saddle notched the logs and then got them put up, and now we live in the house. It's still standing. We've been here 6 years.
Yeah. We came out here. We grew up in the city. We were raised in the city. We had no experience in any of this, and we just kind of jumped in with both feet and said, here we are. And it's been an awesome ride.
Wow. All right. Well, so I usually start at the show asking about your very first gardening experience. You know, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? Where do you, you know, what'd you grow? So, like, are you both from the same city? What city?
We're from the St. Louis metro area.
Okay.
Yeah, we're both from St. Louis.
And did your parents have a garden? What were your first gardening experiences? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Ladies.
There you go, Stacy.
I grew up and we lived in a residential area, but we had like an acre lot, and my dad was Mr. Outdoorsman. And so we had a really nice sized garden, and we had, I had a very good experience with that, but I really wasn't interested in it at all. We always had, you know, all the produce from the garden every year, and he planted it and it was wonderful and he knew what he was doing, but I never paid attention to one thing that he did at all, which I could kick myself for now. But just watching them, I guess it put that, you know, drive inside of me now as I'm older that I totally, you know, I get it now.
And they had grapes, too, on their fence rows and everything.
Yeah, we had grapes. I mean, we grew everything. I mean, we raised, you know, rabbits. I mean, we did everything growing up.
How many kids were in your family?
I was an only child.
Oh, cute. All right, and how about you, Doug?
Doug grew up in an apartment with his single mom and sister in a one bedroom apartment. And then we didn't even move out of there until we were teenagers, and we moved into a house. And by that time, I left home when I was 15, almost 16. So there was zero interest in any of that stuff.
Okay. And then you went and got, I don't know, you lived in the city. And then how many years ago did you say? 9 years ago was it that you moved? Or how long ago did you just pack up and go off grid?
That was 6 years ago.
And 6 years ago.
We were just, it was sort of like we were sick of it. We wanted to know where our food was coming from with all the GMOs and, you know, who knows what they're putting in our meats and all that. We just decided, you know, we're going to live, you know, off the land and just do this. And,
more organic.
Yeah, we wanted to, yeah, be organic and just know what where our food's coming from and be in charge of it.
Okay. So what's been the biggest challenge?
Every day is a challenge. So when we first got here, obviously we had no idea what we were doing. And after we moved in and we were kind of hanging out and we were trying to think about what we were going to do and our systems are in place, because we are off grid with Doug and Stacy. We don't even have any solar power. We don't have any wind turbines. We have zero electricity. We use a generator occasionally.
We didn't even have running water.
Yeah, we just got running water 2 years ago. So 4 years we were hauling water into the property by 5 gallon buckets and 1 gallon jugs. But the we also charge our equipment, like what we're using to talk to you on this podcast, via our truck and you know, an inverter and stuff. We have videos on our channel to describe that. But so when we got out here, it turned out that we're like 7 or 8 miles away from the Amish, which we had no clue. And so we befriended them and started learning some of their techniques. So being the adventurous guy I am, I ended up getting a team of Belgians and a plow from the 1800s. And then I started our first gardening with plowing with Belgians and then harrowing and disking and seeding. And we did everything like the totally old fashioned way.
And it was a 10,000 square foot garden with two people who had never done it before.
Yeah. So that was pretty challenging because, you know, it's a lot of weeding. It's a lot of physical maintenance to get the food to harvest.
All right, so if you had to start it over again today, like all of a sudden your place is wiped out or you moved to Montana, somebody gave you some property in Montana, you're here, there's what would be the first thing that you would do differently, or what would be the first step that you would take if you had to start all over in a brand new place?
So one of the first things we do, because we didn't do that even here, would be plant all of our fruit trees and fruit bushes, you know, like berries, blackberries, elderberries, and all that stuff would be the first thing we would do. And then we would just get right into the what kind of gardening we're doing now, which is the raised beds and composting and doing the back to Eden style, because it's a lot less labor intensive.
Yeah, because when we, for our first year down here, it was, we had over 100 degrees for like a month.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh my
goodness. We had a drought. We didn't have any water. You know, we're hauling buckets from the pond, you know, and then, you know, next year, you know, you have too much rain.
Yeah,
you know,
that's,
it was really,
right.
Yeah. So every year it was very challenging. You'd have bugs 1 year. I mean, you never know what's going to happen from year to year, and especially being off grid. So this past year, we really, you know, we put our minds together. We decided we're going to get raised beds, and we are doing the back to Eden garden. And I absolutely love our raised beds because we made them high enough where they're waist level. And that is my favorite way to do it. I just love it. So we have, you know, over the years, we're getting kind of smart at what we're doing. And if we would probably move anywhere, I would go with the raised beds that are about waist level because they're ingenious. I love them.
I agree 1,000%. And like yesterday, I even went to Home Depot and took all these pictures of like every board in the two aisles of boards, because I want Mike to talk about, because people have been asking me what, you know, what boards would you buy? Where would you start? Because I agree, like Mike planted this little, so my husband's really the gardener and he planted what I call the mini farm, which is, I don't know, a third of an acre maybe. But always before we've like, we started out like you guys did with no running water, you know, had to haul the water, you know, no plumbing, no anything. And so we started out with just two small, well, I don't know if you call them small, like 8x10, very small beds. And then there was no fencing, so, you know, to keep the deer out. And then he built a couple more beds and a couple more beds. And we've always had these really nice raised beds that you could sit on. And the mini farm does not have raised beds that you can sit on like that. You know, he's you know, added some stuff and, like, you know, they're deep beds, I guess you would call them. But they're not the raised beds with the nice wood borders that you can sit on. And so yesterday even I planted, like, a fall crop of lettuce to see if I can get it to grow. And so I was like, oh, it's so nice to be able to sit on the edge of this bed.
Oh, it's when you, if you need to pull weeds or whatever. Oh, I absolutely love them because we make them out of cedar. And that has been my absolute favorite medium. But the thing is, you know, you need other mediums to grow. You know, if I'm going to do my pumpkins and my squashes and things like that. So that's why we use, you know, now our mulch type garden, our back to Eden garden.
But yeah, cedar is going to be the best wood that you can use for build and raised beds. We try to get the raw cut cedar. We have a lot of sawmills in our area, so they're going to last the longest. Though they're heat resistant good, and they're bug resistant good, and so it's just a good board, you know, that's going to last you.
The part of the reason I took all these pictures is because I've been bugging Mike to, like, make things like this for years, and like also his compost bins. And he was laughing at me. He's like, who's going to go to Home Depot and buy wood? He's like, you use recycled wood. Like, I think everything at our place has come from somewhere else. But I was like, you know, most people don't have access to recycled materials. Or, like, he was talking about this one bed is, like, some water bed frame that they found at the green boxes that's been there for years. And, you know, and then I was looking at, like, some of the beds that are kind of falling apart. And I was like, but that thing's 15, almost 20 years old now, you know. No wonder it's... you know, it's a miracle that it's lasted that long, but good to know. So cedar is heat resistant. So for listeners, like, maybe they're probably wondering why heat resistant. Is that, like, so in the summer it doesn't get so hot, or?
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, in your bed you have a lot of water, and then you have the fluctuating temperatures, and it's just a hardier wood for the fluctuating expansions and stuff for, you know, with being outside and stuff. So, like, raised beds, no matter what kind of wood you get, I mean, you know, eventually you're going to have to replace them. And there's nothing wrong with using recycled wood or anything. Just, you know, just make sure you're not getting something like a treated lumber, because you wouldn't want that in contact with your soil. So any kind of raw wood, I mean, you just have to replace it sooner probably than, like, a cedar. But, you know, you got one of our things that we talk about is do what you can where you are. So, you know, it's better to just kind of get moving in that direction than it is just to stand still and be like, well, I can't do it till I have, like, cedar. So we always encourage people to do what you can where you are. We do pallets for compost bins, stuff like that, because we do also do, like, humanure compost. And but yeah, the main thing is just doing what you can where you are. So recycle wood, nothing wrong with it. We wouldn't suggest using like a treated lumber.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because I was thinking after I said that, like, and somebody just even asked Mike about this the other day, was using railroad ties. And I know back in the day people used railroad ties a lot, but they have, what is it, creosote or something that they've been soaked in, so you kind of want to, I'm glad you brought that up. Now, wait, what did you say you put in your stuff? What kind of, was it manure or what?
Yeah, humanure. We compost our toilets, and that's compost. You never heard of that?
Yeah, but not humanure.
What did you do when you guys lived off grid? What did you do with your, you know, going to the bathroom?
We have an outhouse. We still use it.
So you're an in the ground system. So yeah. Basically, the system
has been here for years. Like, Mike's parents bought this place, I think, back in the early 60s.
Right. So basically, the humanure composting system has been around thousands and thousands of years. It's a proven method. You can YouTube it or Google it or whatever. But basically, we use the 5-gallon buckets. We use sawdust as a cover medium. And then we have two bins outside where we pile them up. And then you basically pile up for a year. And then you let it sit for a year. And then it turns into the most black, luscious, great compost ever. And then you can put that in your garden or around your trees or just anywhere in your landscaping. And it's just a much more organic, eco-friendly way to take care of that kind of stuff.
Cool. All right. Well, nobody's talked about that.
All right, welcome to Off Grid with Doug and Stacy. Yeah, actually, if you Google, I can't remember, is it J.R. Hinkins?
You need me to go get the book?
No, it's fine. All you have to do is type in or Google the Humanoar Handbook for your listeners, and you guys can get yourself educated on that, because I think, you know, there's a certain stigma, like, ooh, like people are like, ooh, I can already see everybody on the other side of the screen. Ooh, I mean, how are you? Did you just say that? But if you get yourself educated on that stuff, you know, it can change your life. I mean, we get such great compost out of that. And if you get the Humanoar Handbook, and then you could stumble across like his YouTube videos, he has a few of them out, and he has some of the luscious, greenest, most beautiful garden plants.
Educate. Knowledge is power. Educate yourself about this stuff, because it is.
We're just programmed. You know, we grow up, we go to the toilet, it has a flusher. And like you guys, you've been out there at the outhouse. And, you know, even here, I'll say that the Amish, they have outhouses, but they have an access panel in the back, and they actually scoop it out, which I don't really go for this method because it hasn't been like cured or anything, but they'll actually throw it on their manure wagons when they're doing their animal stuff and then just kind of spread it out into the fields. You know, I don't know if I'm that happy, you know, cool with that system, but this system where you let it age and it composts and it breaks everything down is just a proven, awesome system for creating compost for your vegetable gardens and homestead.
Okay. Well, speaking of gardens, want to tell us about something that grew well this year?
Oh, I'll talk. Okay, I can talk about that.
Okay.
My favorite thing to grow, and I'm going to list a few, are anthocyanin-rich fruits and vegetables. And those are because... on our channel, I like to talk a lot about health and the benefits and the foods, and some foods are better for you than others. And I like the ones that have the bright colors. You know, you have your reds, your blues, your purples, your violets, all those, the chocolate browns. So I like to plant a lot of those, because these anthocyanins are a type of a flavonoid, which are like a type of a powerful antioxidant. And they yield usually like 2 times the amount of antioxidants of like vitamin C. So just by, you know, using your eyes, blueberries, currants, you know, all these type of fruits and vegetables that have these bright colors, they're so wonderful because these compounds help protect you from disease, you know, like, you know, helping with your brain and your aging and memory, your liver, your vision, just your immune system. So I've done very well. I got this heirloom tomato called the Black Beauty, and it's like the darkest tomato, and it's done very well for me. And also I really like the Cherokee Purple. It has a very lush like inside, like when you cut it and you put it with little tomatoes or basil and mozzarella, it's really, really yummy. And I really like the Cherokee Purple. They've done very well for us. And I like the Armenian cucumbers. They look like snakes, and they're huge, and they have a very mild flavor. And actually I think they're from the melon family, if I'm not quite sure, but they taste just like a cucumber. And those have done very well for me. And my Swiss chard has done phenomenal, the rainbow chard. I've done very well. My beds, last year, our beds weren't quite as good because we're trying to get the soil right. But this year, I've had so many, like, superstar projects on my vegetables. I'm just so excited. All my peppers have done well. I did a chocolate beauty, which is a chocolate pepper, because I like those colors, the anthocyanin-rich flavored foods like that. So the Black Beauties have done good. My peppers, let me try to think. Everything has really done good. All my greens have done phenomenally. My arugula and my, you know, romaine lettuces, all my peppers. So everything I've done, I've had a very successful, my green beans. Oh, and then let me tell you, I could go on and on. I planted a new kind of basil because I'm really into herbs, and I love herbs to, you know, spice up my food that we eat here. And I planted a lime basil, and it is amazing. And it grew out the wazoo. It took off half the bed, and it is so wonderful. It has a very lime taste. So if you're going to have Mexican, or, you know, put it with, you know, something you want that lime flavor, it is just luscious. So my lime basil did really good. The one thing that didn't do good, are you going to ask me that later? Should I talk about that later, or do you want me to talk about that now?
Just go right ahead. Yep.
Well, you got to let the host speak too, you know.
I am going to ask you that, so go right into it.
Oh, but go. You can ask me, because maybe you can give me some tips on it, because I don't know. I am the worst at growing eggplant.
So
I try, and it never works. I've tried it in different mediums. I've tried everything, and I don't know what my problem is.
Well, we'd like to add a caveat to our everything that did good section, is that everything that did good was in our raised beds, because this was the first year with our Back to Eden garden. So we're having some issues with some of the plants. It was aged mulch that we put in there, wood chips, but we're still having some of the nitrogen fixing problems and, you know, just stuff like that. So we're going to heavy compost it during the fall and winter and let it set. And then I think next year we're going to be killing it.
Do you guys get a soil test done? Do you send your soil test in to those people? Someone?
Yeah, we're just not that nerdy. We never have really done that.
Because, like, so, like I was telling you, I think in the pre-chat, you're, I think, episode 202, and definitely, we haven't done it either. I talked Mike into doing it this year, and then I just was so busy with school, never got it sent in, but definitely been recommended by a lot of people, like, that Cherokee, because who did they talk about? Was it Elliot Coleman that found out that he needed, like, some obscure thing? I want to say it's boron or something. And, like, sometimes they talk about putting, like, gypsum, which comes from, like, drywall, I want to say. Like, that could be what's missing. And, like, and it's weird. Like, one part of your garden could be missing one thing over here, and another part could be missing something. Because I asked them about, like, our new mini farm versus where Mike's gardened for years over here, closer to the house, and they said they would do two different tests, so that might be something. As far as eggplants, I know Mike struggled with eggplants for the longest time, and he said what finally worked for him was putting the eggplants together. He used to, like, spread them out, and he'd have, like, two in this tomato bed and two in that bed, and one year when he finally put, like, six of them all together in the same bed, it seems to be he's been pretty successful. That seemed to be the biggest thing for him.
Three together was my most, so that's good. I'll have to try that.
But I know for years he struggled with, like, the eggplants would grow. We'd get these beautiful purple blossoms. They're, you know, they're so pretty. And we wouldn't get any fruit. And I'm pretty sure that's the tip that he told me that was what finally worked for the eggplants, was putting them together in the same one bed.
Yep.
I wanted to ask you about a Swiss chard recipe, because I went to the farmer's market the other day with, like, a giant garbage bag full of Swiss chard. And I was thinking, what I need here is to tell people, this is what you do with Swiss chard. This is, and I was, one thing I like to do with Swiss chard is, like, I use the stalks for celery. Since we have a hard time growing celery, I like to use that more. And I just think, you know, they are a little stringier, but I think they have more robust of a flavor. So what's your favorite Swiss chard recipe? I mean, I use Swiss chard in everything. I blanch it and freeze it and put it, like, instead of spinach, because spinach is a harder crop for me to grow. Spinach or Swiss chard or beet greens, I pretty much, you know, put in, like, vegetable lasagna or with eggs or with quiche. But do you have a Swiss chard recipe?
As a matter of fact,
it doesn't sound like you've done them all. Wait till you hear this one.
Okay, cool.
Swiss chard is probably one of the, like, powerhouses of nutrition, high in, you know, potassium and magnesium and calcium. I mean, it is just loaded and loaded in vitamin, and it's so healing and wonderful for the body and detoxifying. I ferment mine. I make a fermented kimchi with it, which is to absolutely die for. If you like spicy foods, this is, you'll love it. And if you don't like spicy food, you can do it without making it spicy. And I have a lot of videos on fermenting on our YouTube channel, but I just use the, I cut the stalks, you know, in, like, little bitty pieces, and then I get the green part and I just kind of pull it apart, and then I cut some carrots, put some red pepper flakes, some garlic, some ginger in, you know, like a mason jar, and you ferment it, you know, you put salt and water and you ferment it. And it's so wonderful. Are you familiar with fermenting?
I don't really do much with fermenting foods, but I've had a lot of guests. I just had this woman from the kombucha camp on just a couple of weeks ago talking about kombucha, which is a fermented food. And I know, and I think listeners will love to go to your website and see that. And I have not made any kind of kimchi, but that sounds great. A kimchi made from Swiss chard.
Yeah, that's basically how we preserve a large portion of our bounty is by fermenting, because when you ferment, your stuff can last 6 months to a year easy. And we do that versus canning because you get more nutritional value from your food that you work so hard to grow for the nutrition out of fermenting than you would by canning.
Because then you're not killing out all the good beneficial enzymes. So you're going to get the probiotics. You know, people are spending so much money on probiotics. So that, there you go. You have your probiotic right there. You have a couple tablespoons of that a day, and it's just great.
I like that. I can hear your duck quacking in the background.
Yes, we got everything out here. Sheep, and we're full-blown homestead. We're outdoors in the outdoor kitchen right now, so yeah, you get a little extra noise.
Nice. Well, so we talked about eggplants didn't work so well this season. We talked about a lot of things that went good. What about, is there something you're excited to try next year that's new that you've never tried before?
Well, I really was looking forward to growing a bunch of, you know, the big giant kind of heirloom pumpkins and a lot of pumpkins and squashes and things. And I had them planted in our mulch garden. But since, you know, there was so much nitrogen being pulled out of a lot of the stuff because it was being so new, it was our first year, I'm looking forward to doing that. So I really want to do so many different types of squashes and pumpkins next year. So,
and I think one of the things she's really looking forward to is we just planted a fig tree. So we're really going to have the figs turning on next year. So I know she's really excited.
Yeah, because we just got a few little ones now, and I'm really looking forward to that too.
Fresh figs are the best. My mom has a fig tree, and those are so good. You don't know. And, like, it's always weird because, you know, figs that you get in the store are, like, this brown color, but a fresh fig is this bright green. To me, it reminds me of a kiwi that's not fuzzy.
Right. Oh, I love them. They're really good for you, too.
Yeah. And then Mike showed me this article on Facebook the other day about eating pumpkin leaves, and I was like, I don't know if I want to try that. One of my friends said she tried it. She said she liked it raw, so you might, if you get your pumpkins growing, might want to try something like that. Have you ever eaten pumpkin leaves? I have never had a pumpkin leaf.
You know, I haven't done that, but I will tell you our sweet potatoes are doing great, and sweet potatoes are the sweet potato. You can eat all of the sweet potato, the potato itself, and then the greens are great, the flowers, and they're wonderful. You can make them into like a saute them in butter, and they're wonderful for you.
I would love to be able to grow sweet potatoes. I'm going to have Mike work on that one of these years. I do eat pumpkin flowers. My mom always made squash and pumpkin flowers. You know, she takes the flowers and makes them in a batter that she fries up. Those are so good. Before we get to the root of things, we're going to take a moment to thank our sponsors, my good friend, Dacia Daly from Simply Josephine.
It's all about handcrafted soaps and apron love here at Simply Josephine. Located in Montana's beautiful Tobacco Valley, I create everything from my home studio. Currently, I offer 6 different kinds of handmade soaps, 3 different salves, using wildcrafted plant medicine from right here in our beautiful valley. In addition to my body care products, I also make several styles of aprons. Everything is available at simplyjosephine.com. We want to share a little love with the Organic Gardener Podcast listeners. We're offering 15% off. Use code OGP15 at checkout. Thanks and have a beautiful day. SimplyJosephine.com.
Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like the other Green Future growers. Well, the Organic Gardener Podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get listening to your first audiobook today. Okay, so this is actually where we get to the part of the show. It's kind of like, I don't know, have you guys been on a lot of podcasts before or done any of that? But a lot of shows have like a lightning round, so we call it getting to the root of things. So Do you guys have like a least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there anything you got to force yourself to get out there and do?
Well, you don't like to get out there and weed when it's 100 degrees and 90% humidity and dew point in the middle of the day. We definitely, we don't do that.
All right. Well, then on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Collecting your bounty, getting all the yummy produce out of it.
Or even just watching the day-to-day progress. You know, like you go out one day and it's this size. The next day it might be doubled if you had some rain. It's just amazing how fast it can really get going.
No, that was a good one. Yeah, I'll switch my answer. That is good. I love to watch how it grows. One minute it'll look like nothing and the next minute it looks great.
Right? I swear there have been a couple of days this summer I'm like, it's growing, right? I can see it getting bigger while I'm standing right here. And it does. Like, sometimes I'll go out and I come back in and I'm like, that thing looks like it grew an inch or 3 inches today. What's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
That we've ever received?
Yeah. And you can each have a different answer if you want.
You get advice from your little ladies. What, do they give you anything good you can remember?
Well, I think it is, you know, as a human body, we need certain nutrients for us to survive. And I don't think people realize that, you know, we need to have, you know, your magnesium and all the different vitamins and calcium. So does your soil. And so when you can get your soil rich, then it'll have a healthy immune system just like we do. And if your soil and your plants won't be healthy, if the soil isn't healthy, and they'll be more susceptible to bugs and disease. And if they're strong and they have a good soil and a good base, then they're going to be strong. So basically that's our thought. We want to get our plant strong and have a strong immune system just like our bodies.
So that was your best advice. I think the best advice that I got was by, you know, watching YouTube videos, people like John Kohler, Growing Your Greens, and One Yard Revolution, you know, just people on YouTube that we connect with. We're friends with Curtis Stone, the urban gardener, market gardener. And I think some of the best advice we've gotten was go to the raised beds, try the Back to Eden, because, you know, Back to Eden doesn't necessarily work in every place. So I think our place is conducive for it. So those two things I think were huge for us. And the one advice that we like to pass on that a lot of people do echo is never give up. You know, keep planting, keep trying to grow, find out what works good for you, and then really focus in on that, and then just always keep trying to experiment and grow new things.
Right, and that's where we've been, because we have tried many different ways of growing, and you know, if one doesn't work for you, then you need to go to plan B. So flexibility is probably the key to anything, so that would be it.
How many raised beds do you guys have now?
Well, we have two L-shaped ones that are rather large. And then we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Now
we have
ten
of them.
Okay. And how about a favorite tool? If you guys had to move to Montana and start all over again, what could you not live without?
My wife.
You can each have your own. Aww.
You mean just like a tool for the garden?
No, you're going with my wife. What's yours, Stacy?
Yeah.
Well, no, I would have to pick him, because you know what? Aww. When we got here, we didn't have anything tool-wise. If I really had to pick a tool, I would pick my husband, but just like a little hand hoe thing.
Yeah, that's what you use the most.
I use that because in the raised beds, I use that a lot. So, and I get the one with the real pointy end.
The dragon, or
what's it called? No, that's not. It's the little hand hoe that has a very pointy end. You know what I'm talking about? I don't know, but that works really good. I use that a lot in the garden.
I don't know. Maybe we can put a picture in the show notes. Doug, I'm only kidding. You can tell us a tool.
No, I mean, as far as the gardening goes, because now we've gone to this like minimalistic type of thing. It's just a good trowel, you know, like. Gardening trowel or
because that's it, because even in our mulch garden, I don't need you can just kind of move it with your hands. I use my hands for most of the stuff I do,
right? And we have a friend that actually makes them from scratch out of iron, and he just makes some really good gardening tools, so we use those in our garden. But you know, I think that would be, you know, just something minimal like that now because of the scale, which even if we moved anywhere else, those would be the first two systems that we would go to. And so I think our tools would still be valuable, even, you know, if we moved to a different place.
And then I have my dad's wheelbarrow from like 1960 that is great. It's in good shape. And those would probably be the two things.
You know, when I first came up with this question, my first gut reaction was a shovel. But then I realized that a wheelbarrow was definitely what I could not live without. Like, to me, that would be the one thing I'd really want to take with me. Because one, they're pretty expensive. I've been trying to buy us another one because now that Mike has his little mini farm way down there, like, we're constantly like getting. So I want to have a wheelbarrow up here by the house and then one for him way down there. So I think a wheelbarrow is essential, moving rocks and boards and compost and straw and everything that you are always moving to me. Weeds, like, I went and did this thing. I call it my secret garden because somehow this one little place got super overgrown this summer. And so I pulled out all the weeds and I think I hauled out 6 wheelbarrow full of weeds on Saturday. And so, definitely. So how about a favorite recipe to cook from the garden or to eat from the garden?
I mean, almost every meal we make is harvested
from the garden.
Yeah. And we always have a little, fun thing.
I'll tell
you.
Yeah. This is what I do. We try to do at least 7, 8, 9, 10 cups of greens, leafy greens, vegetables a day. So I make I have these huge bowls that I make a big salad. I get my scissors and then I'll get Swiss chard. I'll get my kale. I'll get my arugula. I'll get my romaine. I get all the greens, whatever's there. And I cut it up really good. And then I'll get peppers. I'll get tomatoes. I'll get my cucumbers. I make sure I get a handful of herbs and I just make this big, huge salad. I might put pumpkin seeds in it, sunflower seeds in it. And then some fresh onions from our garden. And I make a homemade salad dressing with honey and apple cider vinegar and extra virgin olive oil. And then I put some cheese on it, if it's feta cheese. I like feta. That's one of our favorites. So I put that in there and I mix it all up. And it is to die for.
Do you guys make cheese? Do you guys have cow, dairy, any kind of that?
Yeah, we have access. I get raw milk and I make homemade yogurt. I make everything from scratch and I make mozzarella cheese.
And we barter with our Amish friends for that kind of stuff because for us, it's ROI. So, like, we're not committed to, like, milking something once or twice a day, every day, because we actually do, like, speaking engagements and we're trying to get the word out about this lifestyle. So we're just not committed enough right now to have milking the animals here. So we barter with our neighbors and we make homemade butter and cheese and all that stuff. No problem.
Oh my gosh, homemade cheese is so good. I have a friend who makes homemade mozzarella and it is just to die for. And I'm an Italian coming out of New York, and let me tell you, her mozzarella, homemade mozzarella, is so good. Speaking engagements, where do you guys speak at? Like, if somebody wanted to come check you out, you got anything coming up?
So we'll be in Oregon.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, you guys will be hearing this after we're there. But we'll be in
Santa Rosa, California.
For the Heirloom Expo. That's a 3-day speaking gig. We'll be at the all the Mother Earth News Fairs for the rest of 2017. So if you're by Topeka, Kansas, or you're by Pennsylvania, Seven Springs, Pennsylvania, you can come out and see us. We're also speaking at the Homesteaders of America Conference October 14th in Virginia. And we are doing the Heirloom Expo in Santa Rosa. That's in October as well, isn't it?
September. 1st of September.
Yeah.
What was the other thing I was going to ask you about? What zone are you guys?
6B.
You are? Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. Because somebody from Texas was just asking me about Zone 6B. I think she said Zone 6B. So it is warmer down there. So do you have a pretty good growing season?
Yeah, we do. That's one of the nice things we like about our area is that we have, you know, all the four seasons. We have a pretty long growing season. So we can get the, you know, with the greenhouse now, we can get things in early, early spring and really have a lot of bounty. And then we can take it pretty deep into winter.
Yeah, and especially with a cold frame, you know, you can really keep going.
Which, by the way, if your listeners are interested, we're actually branding an Off-Grid with Doug and Stacy cold frame coming up. And that's going to be kind of neat. And if you guys want to check that out, and you can order one and have it shipped right to your front door.
Tell us more about that.
So we built our greenhouse with Tuftex panels, and they're the best greenhouse panels in the industry. They are 100% UV protection. They don't fade or diminish over time. They have like a 20-year or 25-year guarantee on them. I mean, they're just...
So it's not like the plastic. A lot of times the plastic blows away. It gets ripped.
Yeah, it rips.
It's really nice.
No, it's very, very good. So anyways, we teamed up with them, and we are coming out with a cold frame that we designed, and we're having built by a local craftsman, and we're going to be, you know, basically selling those. And the idea is to help people grow earlier and later into their seasons, have a little herb garden right outside their, you know, maybe back door or something like that. It's just to encourage that. And it's also to get people familiar with the Tuftex panels, because that's what we use for the top of the cold frame. And, you know, so it's like a gateway into the Tuftex thing. But the main goal is to help people start a little herb garden or some sort of seeds or anything earlier and later into the year.
Yeah, and it's a good way to start because it's not something that's so huge. I mean, anybody can do it. You just open it up and then you can put your seeds in there and things grow really easy.
And they're going to be made out of cedar as well. And also, Yeah, it's just a little hot box, you know. It's just going to heat up the soil and give you guys longer growing seasons from spring to winter.
Like, how big are they? Like 2x1 or 3x5 or 6x8 or how big are they?
Oh, that's a good question. I have to look at my notes here real quick.
I got to say, I love this idea. I'm always talking about, I want a kitchen garden right outside my kitchen that has, like, you know, radishes, cherry tomatoes, my lettuces, because I'm a salad girl. Like, that's my favorite thing to eat. And, like, I love Mike's mini farm. I love his gardens. But, like, I don't know why a lot of times I'm putting dinner on the table. I'm like, oh, yeah, I was going to make a salad. And then it's like, there's no way I'm going to cut the salad. And I just want something right outside. And then the herbs, my mom just makes the most delicious salads all summer long. And every one of them tastes different because she's got those fresh herbs right outside. So I love this.
Oh, I'm totally with you there because it is. I put dill on it one time. It totally changes the whole taste of the whole salad.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look up to see if I could see the actual measurements. I think it was something like 4 feet long and 2 feet wide, if I'm not mistaken.
Perfect. But I like that. I think that's such a great idea. I think that's going to be super successful. What we first started out with, like I always call them these little teepee tent type of things that he built. He put like two edges up on the side that were permanent, and then we would lay like these flat, really light chicken wire. I don't know. They were like maybe 4x8. Chicken wire screens kind of on these two teepee ends or whatever, I don't know, like tent ends that he would lift on and off.
Yeah, right. So all the hardware comes with it, directions how to put it together, and it is on hinges, and you'll just lift that up, probably just like what you're speaking of, and it's just on a smaller frame, so, you know, it's not – I've seen people do that on their raised beds, like long raised beds, and so it could get quite heavy. You have to put some chains in there and stuff, but, yeah, it'll be on hinges. You just lift it up, do your business. And then shut it, and then open it up, you know, harvest, put your seeds in, everything like that, super easy.
Yeah, and, you know, I was thinking that you could, with the, because these ones that I've been watching down there, like, you could just easily throw something over it during the hot of the day to kind of shade it. And if yours has this Tuftex, what's it called again?
Tuftex panels.
Like panels. Those probably are made to be out more or gonna last better than just like a piece of plastic. Like, what does he use? You know, like painter's plastic is what he's gonna use. So cool.
Well, and you can get that Tuftex panels at
They sell those panels at any Lowe's and Home Depot and even Menards in some cases.
So I usually ask here about a favorite internet resource, but I have a feeling you guys are gonna say YouTube, but maybe you're gonna say something different. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, our favorite one's going to be YouTube.
And, you know, I don't know. Have we told listeners what your channel... I mean, I guess they just Google Off the Grid with Doug and Stacy.
Yeah, as soon as they put in Off Grid with Doug and Stacy, we'll pop up in a Google search, and we'll also come up on YouTube pretty quick. We have about 100,000 subscribers. We do over 1 million views a month. I mean, so we're a pretty growing channel. And so our, you know, search engines or stuff are kind of tuned into us. Once you put in Off Grid with... we pretty much pop up.
Oh, 1 million views a month? And how long have you guys been doing this?
pretty consistently for about a year and a half. We started at well after we got here, which was my, I didn't understand about YouTube and I wasn't thinking about documenting our journey. We do have some earlier videos when we first got here, but we really got serious about it as a way to help educate people. And also, I mean, to 3 years ago, they started monetizing videos. So it was also a way for us to help supplement income to the homestead. So, yeah, but for sure, a year and a half, we've been posting videos basically every single day. And we take a few breaks here and there, but we're pretty consistent.
Wow. Every day. But a year and a half and you're getting a million views a month? That's crazy. You must be offering some pretty good value because I don't think it's that easy to break into YouTube.
I hope we're bringing value. Our subscribers, we call them Homestead Homies, and they say we're bringing value, and that's our goal, is to bring value. So, you know, there's bigger channels, there's smaller channels that bring value, just we're just glad that it's resonating with people and that they're finding a way through us to broaden their gardening and homesteading and animal raising, you know, just this whole lifestyle in general.
Yeah, because people, you know, we're not like experts in like one thing pretty much. I mean, we are living it and doing it and we're just having our experiences and, you know, knowing what works and what doesn't work. And so we're just kind of people who do it and we're good at a little bit of everything, I guess.
We'll be back next week with part two and the end of my interview with Doug and Stacy. Hey, Green Future Growers. I am so excited because the 2018 Garden Journal and Data Keeper that Mike and I created for you to keep track of your garden journal or your garden journey, your successes, your failures, your challenges, your frost dates, your planting dates, your temperature is now available on Amazon.com, and it's only $16.95, but better than that, on Black Friday, it's going to be on sale for $9.95, so you can get two, one for you and one for a friend. Jokes. Or maybe for a Christmas present, but anyway, what I want to talk about is just how much I love journaling and how much I want to help you create the best journal ever. I mean, you know, the data junkie in me is totally into record keeping. You know, gardening's a lot of work. And so knowing what, you know, date you planted things, you know, what happened in the past, you know, like a lot of times we'll like, you know, plant peas maybe in April and then we'll plant some more, you know, a couple of weeks later and then a couple of weeks after that. And we'll find out that the ones that we planted in May actually are performing better than the ones we did in April. And we can look at the temperature and see, you know, is that why? Or, you know, you don't want to put all that work into your garden and not learn from your mistakes. So recording your dates, your temperature, your weather, your, you know, planting successes, your harvest, like that's one I need to work on. Like what date do we harvest things? And so I created this journal. It's got a cute little sketch that I originally thought was going to be our logo, but I don't know. We don't ever seem to use it, but it seemed like the perfect little sketch to inspire you in the corner. I wanted more lined pages and blank pages, but when I look at my journals, most of my journals are blank pages anyway. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about is like, if you're intimidated by sketching, maybe, you know, I could really help you with that because I am the master of making stick figures come to life. And one of the biggest secrets is just using different colors. Like if I want to draw a group of people, I'll just draw stick figures and like having, you know, five of them in red and five of them in yellow and five of them in blue and five of them in purple can make like your little picture come to life. Or, you know, if you're drawing flowers, just like a basic star shape, but 10 blue stars and 10 green stars and 10 yellow stars together all of a sudden just makes it pop. And, you know, using a couple of different greens for something, like there's so much you can do with a stick figure. And certainly if you ever have any questions, you know, you're certainly welcome to reach out to me. You know, I'm teaching full time, so I'm always the fastest to answer my emails and, you know, Facebook, because the building I'm in, the school, we're not allowed to get on Facebook on the Wi-Fi. It's blocked during the week, so I have a little bit of a harder time. The only way I can really get on that is on my phone, but, you know, you can always reach out to me. I'm always trying, and, you know, Mike can keep a pretty good eye on it. He's certainly, you know, mastered Facebook And keeps up to date with people. So it's always funny to me to see our different feeds and like go in. Like, he has a lot of friends from Standing Rock and stuff because he liked a lot of posts there last year when the water protectors were there. And it's just interesting, you know, because here I am teaching on the Blackfoot Reservation. And then, you know, he knows these other Indians and Native Americans and just, and then he just always has like a lot more political posts on his feed that always fascinate me. But the best was the day that Neil Young was walking around Standing Rock and he's like, look, Neil Young's there live. And just, if you're not into Facebook, I don't know, I can't encourage you to check it out. Join the Organic Gardener private Facebook group, because I always say, you know, I didn't get Facebook till I joined a private secret group. And then that's when I finally got it. But anyway, I'm starting to digress. I'm here to talk about our journal and data keeper. So did I mention that I haven't even gotten a hard copy yet? So I don't even know what it looks like for sure, what it's going to feel like. But as Jim Rohn, the founder of LinkedIn, says, if you're not embarrassed by your first product, you ship too late. So I already know, like, the cover, I couldn't figure out how to put a back cover on. I can't figure out how to change the... As a graphic designer, I'm really frustrated with Apple's Pages program, because I can't even change the document size. Like, you can pick from their pre-made templates, but I can't even like go in and make a page that's like create space that's 6x9. So I need 2 6x9s plus a binder. So anyway, struggling there. So there's lots of challenges in it. And it took me like, I can't even tell you how many copies of this thing I made, because every time I duplicated a page, it would do these weird things. But the point is, there's 52 weeks. There should be 4 pages for each week. There's a place for you to fill in the weather. There's a place for you to fill in the temperature. There's places for you to record what did you eat and what did you grow. What do you buy at the store? How much money do you spend on produce? Now, I've been thinking, like, how am I going to do this? I have, like, images of me in my head, like, taking a picture at the grocery store, like, putting all my produce at the very front or the very back, like, separating it, taking a picture. So kind of all goes through on the, you know, the receipt. But I haven't bought produce in so long. Mike grew so much. I have like hardly bought, I think I've bought like 3 heads of lettuce finally in the last month. But now I have enough lettuce growing in my windowsill here in my little apartment. I don't know that I'm going to need to buy any more lettuce. You know, Mike still has tons of potatoes. I froze so much Swiss chard. That's what I use for spinach. So, you know, our produce bill since August has been very, very minimal. And being a, you know, almost basic vegetarian, somebody who loves vegetables and eats a lot of vegetables, that's pretty good. That's a pretty big chunk of our food. And if Mike could ever get to growing enough wheat so he can, you know, because he bakes all of our bread and tons of cookies, like, that would really save us money, because we spend a lot of money on flour. Because we don't even buy organic, but just buying whole wheat flour is super expensive. And so, anyway, so there's a place to record that. I put a little place where you can put your favorite recipe that you cooked each week. Just to kind of like give you an idea, because like as a teacher, we always find like we think we know what the kids are doing, but until you actually like record their scores, a lot of times you're surprised at what's going on. So I think people will be surprised at where do they really spend their money? Because, you know, your garden space is also limited. Like, if you only buy a couple of cauliflowers a year, or only, you know, a little bit of lettuce, maybe you're not a lettuce eater, or maybe you're not a broccoli eater. You know, you want to keep track of that and find out, because maybe that space would be, or if you're not a potato eater, because potatoes can take up quite a bit of space, you know, where do you really spend your money? What do your kids like to eat? You know, what's a big recipe in your family that maybe you want to grow more of, that you would cook more if it, you know, didn't cost you so much? Or, I don't know, we'll see. It's my, you know, it's the first one. And I, you know, Mike and I, we have 2 journals, I think, from 25 years. So a whole journal for a whole year is going to give us a lot of space. So of course, like lately, I've been doing a lot of digital journaling, but there's nothing like looking back and seeing your sketches and like recording those dates. And I wish I had more information on the dates we've harvested. So like I said, if there's anything I can do to help you with like the sketching part of it or figuring things out, if you have any comments, feedback, let me know. I'm so excited. Get your copy today at amazon.com. And just let me know what you think. So let's get growing.
If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.